This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. We are proud to be the UK's number one legal consumer podcast. Our legal conversation today will be about special educational needs and disabilities, how to get help. I am joined by Barrister Emma Waldron from Three Paper Buildings Chambers in London. Emma specialises in education law and she is regularly instructed to appear in the High Court and Upper and First Tier Tribunals. Emma's expertise includes working on cases with complex issues, and she has a strong knowledge in representing matters involving individuals' special educational needs and those that have an intense sensitive nature. She is recognised as a leading individual in her field, and she is listed in Chambers and Partners and the Legal 500. Emma, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you ever so much for having me, Hattie. It's lovely to be back.
It's lovely to have you. Right, having a child who has or may have special educational needs and disabilities requiring more assistance than the standard help and support that is given in their school can become a stressful and trying time for any parent, particularly dealing with the process of trying to get your child assessed and then the required help from the school. The term special educational needs and disabilities, also referred to as SEND, is a topic that until you have a child in this position, you may have never even heard of. We have just under 1.5 million pupils in England who have special educational needs and disabilities, and year on year, the numbers are on the rise. But what help are schools and the system obligated to give a child with SEND? What is the best approach to take if you're trying to get the much needed extra help for your child? And what steps can you take if your school and even local authority are not giving your child the support you think he or she should be getting? In this episode, Emma and I will be bringing you the answers to all of the above and much more, together with our top tips, as always, in plain and simple English. Emma, right, here we go. Can we start by explaining what our laws state that the government is obliged to deliver for a child with special educational needs and disabilities?
Absolutely. And that's a really, really good place to start. And what a brilliant question. I think to answer that question, it's helpful actually just to look at what the government and what the state needs to provide to all children of compulsory school age. Under Article 2, Protocol 1 of the European Convention of Human Rights, that provides that no person shall be denied the right to an education. And in the exercise of any functions which it assumes in relation to education and training, the state shall respect the right of parents to ensure such education and training in conformity with their own religious and philosophical convictions. So that sounds like a really, really big...
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a lot.
And trying to break that down is difficult because it seems like that's an absolute right, but actually it's a qualified right. And I think it's important for all parents to understand that, regardless of whether they've got a child with special educational needs or not. It's not an absolute right. It's about a right about access to educational institutions. So that's if we were to look at all children. Yes. Regardless of whether they've got SEND or not. In terms of disabled children, generally there's a duty on local authorities in England to exercise its functions with a view to securing that they identify all children and young persons in their area who have or may have special educational needs, and also a duty to ensure that they identify all children and young persons in their area with a disability. Once a child or a young person has been identified as having a disability or special educational needs, or someone who may have special educational needs or a disability, the local authority is then responsible for that individual.
So just to make that crystal clear, and I think there's Section 20, isn't there, Children and Families Act 2014, that defines this really clearly as having a special educational needs and disabilities. If excuse me, if he or she has a learning difficulty or disability which calls for special education provision to be made for him or her. So the SEND support in the system by which schools should assess the needs of the children and then provide appropriate support. So it's a statute, it's law, it's absolute. The school has to provide provision by assessing the needs of the child and saying what support may be required. And I just want to just quickly mention, you know, areas, because when we say SEND, it can cover so much, can't it, Emma? I mean, you've got behaviour, ability to socialise, difficult. It could be difficulties with reading or writing or at the expected levels, because we do have this, and I've got children and I've seen school reports, you know, you've got performing, not performing, or trying to perform, underperforming. You've got all these pigeonholes and boxes that we now have to fit, you know, human society into. Even the ability to understand things or concentration levels or physical ability. Yeah. There's so many areas.
There's so many facets to SEND. Yeah, so I think in terms of what I see, lots of the cases that I see involve children, young people with diagnoses of ASD, ADHD, but also dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia. I think there's...
I've not heard of dyscalculia, I have to say.
Often with children, as an example, with dyslexia, there's been a lot of, I think, misperception that if you have dyslexia, you won't get an education healthcare plan because you won't be eligible. It's simply not the law. That's not correct. So there's, as you say, it can incorporate so many things, not just physical disabilities. It's much, much broader than that.
So I think the key here thing, and I think there's an SEND Code of Practice 2015, without boring our listeners with the sort of the statutes of the laws, where the school must assess, plan, do and review. It clearly says that. So you have the right to say to the school, I would like my child assessed, please. And I would like a plan of how we're going to deal with the difficulties that my child is having. And I would like to see this plan being you know, laid out and being carried out, which is the doing part, and then to review it. So that is statute in our law. So a school can't say, well, actually, we know there's something wrong. We can't quite put our finger on it. We don't actually know what it is. And we'll just let your child slip through the net and not have the opportunity to get the level of education that should be delivered on the basis that we don't actually know exactly what and how is wrong.
Absolutely. Okay. And there's also, of course, the Equality Act duty and the, yes, the duty to make reasonable adjustments for a child with a disability. So yes, I think that's also a consideration for schools, that they can't just simply say, oh, well, you know, we're not doing anything here. They have a duty to make reasonable adjustments for a child with, yes, disabilities. So that's another factor I think that's worth considering. There's so many complex laws that all interlace here. It is a tricky area.
Yes, and I think that you just said the absolute key word. The school is under a duty. They are under a duty to actually take action, to assess, plan, do and review those plans. So for parents who have identified that their child may have SEND needs and they are genuinely worried for their child at school, what would you say would be a good approach for them to make with their school? And what would be the right type of questions that they should be asking the school to try and get an assessment followed by the right support for their child, Emma?
I think the phrase that immediately springs to mind, or the word that immediately springs to my mind, is collaboration. Try and work collaboratively and cooperatively with the school. Work with the school as best as you possibly can. I'd certainly recommend that parents book in some time to speak to their child's class teacher if they are worried, or teaching assistant if your child is working regularly with the TA. And also, all schools should have a SENCO, a Special Educational Needs Coordinator. So don't be afraid to reach out to the SENCO if you think that your child's needs aren't being met. And if you
schools should have a SENCO, you're saying, should have,
they should have somebody who is responsible for coordinating special educational needs provision within the school. So definitely speak out to that person, reach out to that person. And I think the sorts of questions as a parent that you would probably want to know the answers to is really related to progress. How is your child progressing, and are they progressing in line with their peers, or are they struggling to make progress? And if they're struggling to make progress, that might be a sign of unmet need. Similarly, we've spoken, Hattie, about behaviour. Sometimes what we can see, particularly in cases where you've got children with diagnoses of ASD, is we call it a bit like the Coke bottle effect, that they're trying to hold everything in at school. They're trying to conform to all of the sort of expectations that are placed on them in the education setting. And what parents then see at home is this explosion and children coming home and having really extreme meltdowns because they are not coping very well in that environment, and they're trying to hold themselves in.
You know, I struggle a lot with the whole let's put people into a box and let's have a 3-column box ticking exercise of underperforming, performing, and performing over, you know, above average.
Yeah.
Because every single human being is so unique and so different. And for me, a great school, a great educational setting is where the best out of every child is being brought out. That's for me a great educational setting. And I think, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, schools are not doing that or are doing that, but really the whole sort of let's get you in a box or label you if you don't fit in the box, I struggle with that a lot,
yeah.
I have to say. I think that if somebody, you know, if you look at us as adults, not every adult performs the same in life. Let's just take some basic things of, you know, some fun things. Not everybody can bowl. Not everybody can play pool. Not everybody can run well. Not everybody can, you know, cook well. So why is it then that with the educational system, we say, okay, well, you've got to perform in this way? And I think that if your child is in the wrong setting and you feel that school is not providing the provision I want, it's not the best place for my child, don't hesitate to look around and look at other options, other educational settings, other schools that you may be able to move your child to that may be a better place for your child.
Yeah, absolutely. And also see what more the school might be able to do in terms of assisting. As I said before, I think working collaboratively is really important. But yes, don't be afraid to say to the school, you know what, I think that there's more going on here than perhaps we appreciate. Maybe we need to look at bringing some external agencies in to assist here. And that could be a referral to an educational psychologist or speech and language therapist or occupational therapist.
So you could ask your school, you could say, look, I'd like somebody from the outside to come and assess particularly what you know, my child is struggling with.
Yeah, the worst that the school can say is no. We can't do that. We can't fund that. And if that becomes the case and you're still concerned that your child has unmet special educational needs or disability, I'd say the next step up from that would be considering making an application to the local authority for something called an education healthcare needs assessment.
Yes, and that's the first, come on to that.
Yeah,
yes,
that's the first sort of step in the road of going down, getting a what used to be called a statement, now they're called education healthcare plans for a child or a young person. So yes, you can make that referral as a parent, and a school can also make that referral. It doesn't have to come from the school. And again, this is an area where there's a lot of misunderstandings and misinformation out there. Lots of parents think they have to have the school on board. The school has to make the referral. It's not the case.
And that's key. So let's just clarify that. And we're talking about, you know, if the school either says we can't fund the need to bring other people, you know, other experts from the outside to come and actually help us assess your child. And if the school is or isn't on board is irrelevant. You can make an application to your local authority, to your local council for the educational healthcare plan, for your local council to actually participate and carry that healthcare plan, to conduct that healthcare plan. But if a school is not providing the support that a child requires and the parents are not satisfied, even after being cooperative, trying to collaborate, as you say, Emma, and they bring this to the attention of the school, you know, more than one occasion, nothing's been done. What rights do the parents have to take the matter further, and where could they start? So we're saying the first starting point is you could go directly to your local authority.
Yeah.
And say,
and I think in the majority of cases, that's the better approach to take. So go direct to the local authority and request an EHC needs assessment. And at that point, the local authority makes it, it's a binary decision. It's yes or no, we're going to carry out the needs assessment. If the decision is no, then a parent has a right to appeal that in the first tier tribunal.
And do you know, I recently had a case where a parent was told, the parent eventually went and got their child privately diagnosed. They went and had a private assessment. The school wouldn't carry out the assessment. The local authority wouldn't carry out the healthcare plan. They went to the first tier tribunal, which is where you're saying that a parent could go, and they won, hands down. And both the school and the local authority were unfortunately really criticised by the tribunal, but for not carrying out the healthcare plan as they should in order to get the provision for the child. I mean, what about, and I know it's very difficult to say this, Emma, because we don't know what timescales could be like. It probably depends from school to borough and everything else. But, you know, what I would be concerned in that position is if I had to go to a first tier tribunal, do these things happen quickly or are they really long and drawn out? Because your child is missing out on help whilst you're trying to get the help.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think that question that you've put there, Hattie, comes at a really, really bad time for us as practitioners in the SEND tribunal, because at the moment, the waiting lists from issuing your appeal to actually getting it heard are taking an incredibly long time, the longest that I've ever seen in my career.
Wow.
And that is a real concern. What I would say is, in terms of a needs assessment, so that first sort of block in the road, as it were, on the path to securing an EHCP for your child, those cases are dealt with on the papers usually. So we are getting results in those cases far quicker than we are in others. So that's the first step, is secure the EHC needs assessment.
So what we're saying is that's being dealt with without a hearing.
Yes.
And okay. That's been dealt with on the basis of the paper application, and somebody will look at it without having to have a hearing of any kind in order to come out with the answer or the decision.
Yeah, in the majority of cases. And that's quite usual for the decision to refuse to conduct a needs assessment, which is a decision made by the local authority. After that, so once you've got your needs assessment, the local authority then makes its decision of whether or not to issue the education healthcare plan. And again, if they refuse, you have a right to an appeal. Assuming you get over that and the plan is issued, it's first sent to you in a draft format where there will be no school named in the plan, and then it's issued in its final format. And what the education healthcare plan will do, amongst other things, is it will set out the description of your child's special educational needs and disability, provision that child needs to meet those special educational needs and disability, and then a placement. And you can appeal all of those sections of the plan, so sections B and F and I. You can also ask the tribunal now to make recommendations in respect of health and social care as well, under what's called the extended powers of the tribunal.
Wow.
So it could be, imagine if you get refused at each and every stage, that will be a very long drawn out process potentially.
Yes.
What I would say is lots of these cases do settle. I obviously see the ones that don't, but an awful lot of these cases do settle. And local authorities are under pressure too.
Because I just want to slow it down just a little bit, because what you said there just pricked my ears. So just to go over what we're saying is, you go to the school, you ask the school to assess, to put a plan together and to maintain that plan. If you're not getting anywhere with the school and they're saying, you know, they're just not providing what you think is the provision for your child needs, you can go to the local council and you can ask for the educational healthcare plan to be carried out by the council. If you feel that the council is failing you on that, it's the first tier tribunal that you would make the SEND application to. And you just mentioned you see cases that don't succeed. So are we saying then, and this was going to be the next part of what we were going to talk about, if both the school, the local authority, and then you go to the tribunal and you don't succeed, somebody can come to Emma Waldron at 3 Paper Buildings Chambers and say, help me out because I need legal assistance to be able to resolve this. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, I mean, the majority of appeals that are issued in the first tier tribunal are issued by parents who are litigants in person, the vast majority.
And let's just explain what that means.
Yeah.
So people that, what Emma's just said there is the majority of people that go to the first tier tribunal to issue an appeal against the local authority in the school or both, do it themselves. They complete the paperwork, the documentation, they turn up and they represent themselves. That's what a litigant in person is.
Yeah.
Sorry, Emma.
I know. So the tribunal is very, very used to dealing with parents who are presenting their own
themselves.
Cases and not having lawyers involved. What I would say, and I'd urge a kind of slight kind of cautionary tale here to your listeners, is that the tribunal is an evidence-based jurisdiction. So it has to have evidence before it to make decisions in respect of education healthcare plans. So whatever you can obtain, whether it's letters from GPs, healthcare practitioners, speech and language therapists, educational psychologists, you need to be presenting evidence to the tribunal so that it can make a decision based on that evidence. In terms of who can help, yes, you can go to solicitors or barristers directly.
Do you do direct access, Emma?
I do, yeah, and I think it's an area where it is suitable for this type of work.
So let me just explain to our listeners very quickly what that means. Direct access to a barrister means you go directly to the barrister's chamber to instruct the barrister through their clerk without instructing a solicitor's firm. I am a massive fan of direct access on areas of law where it works. And the clerk, so every barrister has a clerk and Emma has a clerk at three paper buildings chambers. Every clerk will be able to tell you this, we think this is suitable, or actually we do need the further assistance of a solicitor to be able to instruct. But if you go direct access, it will cost you a lot less because you're only paying the barrister. You're not paying the barrister and the law firm. Massive fan of that kind of work. Yeah. And Emma does direct access.
Thanks for that plug. My clerks would be delighted.
Absolutely.
I think the only other thing that I would say, and just again to, because I understand that for lots of parents with children with special educational needs, and for everybody out there at the moment, times are tight. There are lots of independent organisations, charitable organisations that can also provide some assistance through this process. So just to throw out, I think, three names that I come across regularly, IPSCA, IPSCA, they offer lots and lots of help to parents who have children with special educational needs or disabilities who are going through this process. Sendias is also a really, really good service for free support for parents. And SOSSEN, all organisations that I come across regularly, they really know their stuff. And they are there and
helpful,
out there to provide
Emma.
Free advice to parents too. So it's not always about just instructing solicitors and barristers to get the job done. There are also alternatives available out there for parents who can't afford that.
No, that's really helpful. I came across two great websites that offer lots of free initial help. And I don't know whether they can put you in touch with somebody beyond that. But it's one was parents.actionforchildren.org.uk.
Yeah.
And the other one was senaction.co.uk, which offer free consultations and free conversations. But I mean, I totally get it. And I don't know what the position is on costs in a tribunal, Emma. If you win and you've incurred legal costs, or you've gone and privately had to get, you know, assessments for your child, which have cost money, are you able to claim that from the other side? Because I know in standard tribunal situations, you can't really get your costs off the other side.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's the same with the SEND tribunal. Generally,
right.
Costs aren't awarded. They tend to be awarded only where a party has behaved unreasonably. And that test is a really, really high threshold test. For any of your listeners out there that have got any experience in employment tribunal cases, I think we generally find it's an even higher benchmark than exists in the employment tribunal. So it is really difficult.
And I think, again, just to break that down a little bit further, what we're saying is if you've incurred costs, i.e. you've gone and instructed somebody in the legal world to assist you, or you've gone and had, you know, private reports created in order to support your child's position, if you win in the tribunal, you can't then say to the tribunal, well, I want the school or the council, whoever it is on sitting on the other side as defending their position, to pay me my costs you can ask for it, but what Emma is saying is the test to actually, for the tribunal to say, yes, we'll accept and order the other side to pay your costs is very, very high. And it's very difficult to get your costs paid by the other side.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Emma, that's all we've got time for.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's been an absolute delight to have you. And I have to say, while researching this topic, I found out so much information that I didn't know. And I think there's a lot of myths around this topic, as you kind of mentioned in the beginning. And it's, I think, you know, it's another area of law which, unfortunately, if you don't have some basic knowledge on, when there is a problem and you have to face it, it just is so much to take in for people. You know, and yes. Children are precious things in life. You know, they're very precious, and we do everything to try and carve out the best route for them. So I hope that together we've been able to give some useful information to our listeners on this episode.
I hope so too.
So what I'll say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. We have over 160 to choose from. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.